Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Güter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar. Tor!
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's episode, we'll be discussing all of the action from match day 20. There was lots to look forward to heading into this weekend's action. From a top of the table clash, revenge is a dish best served cold. Could one of those teams enact revenge after a DFB Pokal exit? And the battle of the basement, the relegation battle is heating up continuously. Who are the winners and losers from this weekend? Let's find out. We'll start at the top of the table. St. Pauli welcomed Greuther Fürth to the Milan Tor on Saturday afternoon, and we were treated to a goal fest, five in total, but it is the league leader St. Pauli who extended their advantage at the top of the table with a 3-2 victory. Elias Saad opened the scoring on the half hour, and 3 minutes later, Dapo Afolayan's effort was deflected off Gideon Jung and into the back of the net. Fürth did get a consolation just before halftime to make things interesting through Armindo Zeeb and levelled the scores on 59 minutes through Simon Asta with a pile-driving effort to make it 2-2. As the sun rose, St. Pauli flew through the ashes and found the game-winning goal, and it was Saad again for his sixth of the campaign to give St. Pauli all 3 points and to help negate the disappointment of losing in the DFB Pokal quarterfinals to Fortuna Düsseldorf in penalties. For me, St. Pauli were the better team. They certainly got it going early. They were able to put behind the disappointment of that cup defeat. And Elias Saad was the driving force of that. He had a fantastic game. Obviously got the 2 goals, but what he was able to do on the left-hand side. And it's an interesting matchup with Asta, because Asta really likes to get forward. He's quite aggressive. And sometimes you can leave yourself to be a little bit vulnerable, and the way St. Pauli play with that front three, there has to be a lot of communication. It did seem, especially early on, that Saad and Afolayan on the wings were able to get a lot of time and space to make pretty concise decisions, in the final third, and it probably wasn't as a surprise. If you look at the passing maps and where St. Pauli were doing the most damage at the edge of the area, especially on the right-hand side, they get Afolayan deep with Saliakas, who, as similar to Asta in the sense that they both really like to get forward. They're allowed to be that aggressor. It was a pretty... 3-2 doesn't really sum up the game. Fürth didn't really get a lot going in the offensive end. They were just mightily efficient. In the good chances they had, they took them. The Zeeb one, I think Nikola Vasil will want that one back. It was pretty poorly played from him. Essentially, it was a ball that was kicked straight at him. And yeah, his momentum was going the wrong way initially, and it's quite difficult to recover. You could see that, it was a weird weekend for goalkeepers. I mean, Jonas Urbik had a decent game, and he was perhaps a little bit unlucky. Especially the second goal. Took a wicked deflection and in. But ultimately, look, I think Fürth had game planned it. They were okay having a little bit less of the footy. But the quality of chances they gave up was pretty alarming. I mean, to give up 14 shots on target from 20 shots in total. It's hard to win games. It's hard to win games when you're playing in that particular manner. It's a recipe for defeat. And ultimately, Fürth can take some good things out from the game. They were very good at being efficient in that final third. Zeeb has scored in all three of the games this calendar year, which is a massive positive when you look at like the stocks they've got in the front half. Tim Lempele, who assisted the Zeeb goal. We obviously got Huagorta. Yeah, they're a little bit lean. Sabeni hasn't really done much since he joined from Paderborn, and Dixon Abiyama is now in Kaiserslautern. So, yeah, like they are a little bit lean in that sense. So they are, you know, very much required to get a lot out of Zeeb and Lempele. And yeah, Zeeb's now got 6 goals for the campaign. He's had a pretty good season. Certainly started to figure it out, which will be at the benefit of Fürth. But yeah, you could just kind of see they defensively they had a little bit of trouble being able to manage the pace and intensity that Pauli were playing at. And you know, a lot of credit has to go to Fabian Hertzl. It's not easy coming off a pretty short break. I mean, they were the early game of the week on Tuesday night to play Saturday against a pretty good outfit in Fürth, a largely similar starting 11. It's a great result for them. And given what happened elsewhere around the league, you know, their advantage at the top is now 5 points. And yeah, still undefeated after 20 games, best defensive record in the league. They are really humming, and it's going to be difficult. I think we can all acknowledge that it's going to be really difficult to chase down St. Pauli in this form. It's not to say that it's not impossible, as we know the Zweite Bundesliga can do all kinds of crazy things. That being said, though, they really showed it. In the first half, that really opening 15 minutes where they put Fürth under immense pressure, really set the tone for a fantastic performance. And yeah, it's all looking good for them so far. But 3 interesting tests coming up. They've got Magdeburg away. And that could be quite a tricky game. Very much an assertion of who can really dictate the play. We know Magdeburg want to be very ball dominant. And then lots of action through Attic on the left. Braunschweig, who we'll talk about in Group 2, you know, have been good. Like, their last month and a bit, so end of Hinrunde, start of Rückrunde, has been pretty good. They did lose, obviously, on the weekend. We'll talk to our special guest about Braunschweig in Group 2 as to where they're at. And then Kiel really struggled since the winter break. Winless. Haven't really found a way to return to that form. They've got injuries. But, you know, that's a World Feed game on the 23rd. That's a Friday night game. So, interesting. You know, St. Pauli's opponents all have something to play for, especially Magdeburg and Braunschweig, who are trying to avoid the drop in Kiel, still very much in the promotion fight. Fürth, they dropped down to 4th with this defeat, and the next 3 games are tricky. You know, Hertha at home. You don't really know what you're going to get from Hertha at the moment. Just stop Fabian Reiser, I suppose. Hanover are starting to pick it up, and that will actually be quite a tricky game at the Heinz von Heiden Arena, and then Nürnberg in the Frankenland Derby, which is a Sunday game on the 25th, which, you know, I think Zorniger would love to get that one as well. Keep them very much in the fight for promotion or even the playoff, but they've definitely exceeded expectations. They're just, whether they can continue to do this, we'll have to wait and see. We spoke about Hertha just briefly. Let's talk about them. They welcomed Hamburg to the Olympiastadion. These two sides have already played at this particular venue this season. That was in the DFB Pokal round of 16, where Fabian Reiser willed Hertha to a famous cup victory. But there wasn't much he could do during the week when Kaiserslautern turned up to the Olympiastadion and scored a resounding 3-1 victory to secure their place in the semi-final. Hertha really ruining the missed opportunity. And they really, yeah, just, it's been a pretty ordinary week for them. They obviously lost in Wiesbaden on matchday 19, lose the cup game, come home, got Hamburg in the top spiel. Hamburg, very wanting revenge for that cup exit, but also the opportunity to get themselves back into the top 2. They knew a win would do that. And a win is what they would finish up with. No goals in the first half, but Hamburg were vastly dominant in that category. They were all over Hertha, who we'll talk about like their issues in a second. Second half begins, and obviously we've still got the DFL protests against the DFL, I should say. And that was about half an hour of protesting from the Hertha fans, who very much had a different, shall we say, a different way of it, of prolonging the protest. What has been pretty common is obviously tennis balls and chocolate, the golden coins being thrown out onto the pitch. But normally what's happened is that everyone throws them all at once and you get probably a 5-10 minute delay. But a very tactical move from the Hertha fans in the main curve was to just throw them a couple at a time, 3-4 at a time. And when it seemed like the game was going to get underway, they'd get more. And quite impressive, they used the dog throwing apparatus that you use if you've got a dog. I don't, but considering the distance between where the pitch is and where the curve is, and in between you've got the athletics track, some really good throwing work by the Hertha fans. But that 30 minute delay, yeah, it won some fans over, others not so much. Hamburg were really good from the restart. They get the goal through Miro Muheim. I thought Ernst, similar to the Vasil goal he conceded, the first one, the Zeeb goal. Yeah, really. I know that like Leisner is kind of in the way, but he had plenty of time to see it. It wasn't exactly like a pole-driving effort. Unsurprisingly, a change comes immediately after the goal. Fabian Riza, they're still working up to fitness. He comes in. His initial shot is saved by Hoya Fernandez, but it falls to Haris Tabakovic, who calmly puts the ball in the back of the net to make it 1-1. And from there you almost felt like a bit of deja vu, like, is Fabian Riza going to rip this game apart? That's what he does. But I thought Van de Brempt was okay on him. Obviously not having the fresher legs made it a bit difficult, but he was serviceable. But the goal came, you know. Look, Hamburg made some changes. They moved. They took Yata off in around 80 minutes. Rice, who coming off the bench, moved Ferrai to a wing, and Ferrai was the catalyst for the game-winning goal. It's a wonderful cross, and Ludovic Rice is untouched. I don't know how anyone missed him. I get he's not a particularly tall fella, but that kind of defending in transition is inexcusable at this level, and Rice with an open header. And he puts the ball in the back of the net to make it 2-1 and a win for Hamburg. And a deserved win for Hamburg. They were much the better side. They looked the more likely as the game progressed as well. And this is an important month coming up for Hamburg. You've got Hannover, Hansa Rostock and Elversberg. You know, two of the three sides are fighting relegation. Well, Elversberg not so much now. Hannover will be a tough test for them at home. But, it's kind of an interesting one because, yeah, we can see what Hamburg can do. They do have the flexibility with players. And, like, I love Ferrai as a player on the wing because he has that individual quality. He's got that creativity. And the man can put a ball into the box. And a fantastic ball in for the goal. So they've got some interesting options. If Rice is available, you want to pick him with Meffer and Laszlo Benes. But I feel like you need to have Ferrai in the team as well as an attacking winger. Really think that's beneficial for them. But yeah, good result. And there was a bit of chatter about, like, it feels like the Volta stuff is starting to get a bit more noisier. And he just has to keep winning games. But yeah, that was a big win for him. Given that they really threw that cup game away in the round of 16, the one really game they should have actually won. But you know, Fabian Riza all on his own. Let's talk about Hertha, because I think this year has been the start of this year and the cup loss to Kaiserslautern were a great microcosm of like the big issue. The team has no identity whatsoever. It's really difficult to figure out what this team wants to do. On the ball, defensively, they are very hit and miss. And this game was a great example of the two goals they gave up. You know, a hit from range. And it's just strange. They're a strange team. They're really reliant on Fabian Riza to do a lot. And there's no real... For mine, there just doesn't seem to be any sort of leadership outside of him. to make a difference, to really stand up and structurally get that. And a lot of that should come on Pau Dardai as a coach. We know there's an understanding that Dardai isn't the most gifted in a tactical sense. Clearly a good man manager and obviously loves Huerta. No one can fault him for that. But they just, you figure out, it seems like the game plan is far too easy and it doesn't matter what formation they're playing and what their intent is with possession. You know the ball is going to be on the left-hand side and you know that Fabian Riiza is going to be the guy that's either going to put a ball into the box or he's going to cut across Ian Robin style and drive into the box. So they don't really have solutions. It seemed like for a period that they'd figured it out. They had Winkler on the right. Tabakovic was scoring goals, but the moment the goal started to dry up from Tabakovic and, Riiza would find a way, but they're very reliant on his output to make things happen. And there's not a lot you can really be optimistic about when that's your only game plan is to just get it to him and let him cook. And there's another team we'll talk about in Group 3 who has a very similar issue and over-reliance on a particular player. And if you take that player away from that team, are they in that position where they are today? Would Huerta be 11th and 6 points above the relegation zone? Would they be lower? How many games can we pinpoint to that Fabian Riiza has almost on his own carried them to victory? Because scoring goals hasn't been easy. They've scored 37 goals this season, which is, it's top echelon. But defense, 33 goals conceded is not bad. It's as many as Eintracht Braunschweig, by the way, who sit 17th. So, yeah. It's their eighth defeat of the season from 20 games. And they are now winless in their last four. So that game against Fürth away on Sunday, it's a big game. It's a big game for Huerta. It ventures into the must-win territory because they've had a pretty slow start to the new year. They would have hoped to have made something of the cup game. But they were really poor in that, especially for the first 80 minutes. They really weren't there. Then Magdeburg at home. That was the 10-goal game. it felt so long ago. And then Braunschweig on Sunday. Speaking of Magdeburg, let's talk about them. They welcomed Holstein Kiel on Friday night to the MDCC Arena. Just over 20,000 made their way for a pretty one-sided contest, truth be told. But the result ends 1-1. And I know Magdeburg will be pretty upset and should be upset they didn't win this game because they were, from the two sides, the better. But God, their defending, just get a clearance is sometimes difficult for them. And the goal they conceded was from a set piece. They failed to clear it. It forced to Timo Becker. He scores. Fourth goal of the campaign for him. But then they were very reliant on Timon Viner to be the man, and the man he was. They gave away a penalty early in the second half. Luke Castaños, who's been pretty reliable for Magdeburg up top, he steps up and it's a pretty weak penalty, admittedly. But you've got to go the right way as a goalkeeper, and Viner does enough to not only save the ball, but the ball trickles out for a corner. And it's just, for Magdeburg, it felt like one of those games where they never looked like scoring, despite how dominant they were. For a long period of time, you never felt confident that they were going to find a goal. But then suddenly, with time winding down into the depths of stoppage time, Magdeburg would find a way. And this seemed, again, this theme of goalkeepers' spillages or parries into dangerous areas that lead to goals, very common, and this was another one. Ito does really well to sort of drive into the box, dribbles about a couple of players, hits it. It was clearly too hot to handle for Viner, and substitute Emir Cajunha, who was playing Regionalliga Südwest football for SKV Freiburg. He only had six goals in the Regionalliga this season, but he took his chance. And, you know, I don't think he'll forget that moment. How would you ever forget your first Spider-Man League goal? I could never imagine it, regardless of how it comes. But, yeah, look, it was the Magdeburg of old in the sense they had a ton of the footy. They were able to create a lot of chances, plenty of action on with Atik. You know they love to get Atik and involved. And good things happen when you get the ball to number 23 for Magdeburg. But, yeah, you can, like, just having a look at sort of the pass map and heaps of action to Atik. You know, Ellen, who was playing, surprisingly, a little bit more central. You know, Ellen Curry was playing a bit more on the left, and you know, we saw little bits of actions with Cheka, but it was you know, Amiichi as well. Yeah, so it was pretty dominant. You know, Kiel weren't really trying to do a whole lot. It wasn't exactly like they were pressing. They were very much trying to stabilize the low block, and you know, when you get the goal ahead, that they're more than happy to sit back, invite Magdeburg to come for to hold the ball, and if you can't break us down, then we're okay with that. But it's a problem. There's an issue for Kiel. Like they've had a lot of injuries, admittedly, and it is starting to affect them. But you know, only 1 point from their opening three games of the new year. And look, it's just not happening for them at the moment. They're having a bit of a tough time scoring goals. It seems to be the big sort of red flag for them at the moment. You know, they're really not getting a lot out of Machino, which is a shame. Skripski was back in this game as well, but yeah, it's been a tough start. They just haven't been able. They haven't really felt comfortable in the offensive end of their game plan. And you just, yeah, like, you don't want to make a bigger deal out of it than what it is. They're still in a really good position. They still sit third heading into the next match day. And there's still a lot of game to be done. But, yeah, the defeats, you know, the 2-1 at home to Braunschweig was a bit of a shocker. You know, Fürth jumped them last week. And here, they, you know, they had the advantage, but they couldn't hold on. But their next three games are pretty big. You know, Schalke with the win on the weekend and the pressure on them, but then, and that's a World Feed game on Sunday. Paderborn away, and given the result they had, that's not an easy game either. And then they've got the big game against St. Pauli. So massive fixtures ahead for Kiel. They need to find some solutions, especially at the offensive end, if they're going to find a way to overturn this little bit of mini slump. For Magdeburg, they got St. Pauli at home, Hertha away, and then Schalke at home for the top game. But big win for Magdeburg. They needed it. And given results elsewhere, you know, it's a good point for them. But they're still, you know, they're a game and a bit ahead now of 16th. That'll give them a little bit of hope heading into the next fixture. Let's take our first break. And on the other side, we'll talk about our Group 2 games, starting with Schalke and Braunschweig. But before that, let's hear from our sponsor today, which is Manscaped. It's time for the ultimate face-off. The Beard Bowl is here, as the two best teams square off to see who the champion of facial fuzz is. Our friends at Manscaped are prepping everything you need for game day. Manscaped's Beard Hedger Pro Kit is the MVP of facial grooming, offering precision trimming, water-resistant technology, and enough styling options to outplay any opponent. And guess what? You can join the winning team, along with 10 million men who already trust Manscaped with our special offer. Go to manscaped.com and use the code 2BundesligaPod for 20% off and free shipping. Craft your winning look with Manscaped. Don't let your beard be benched. It deserves the spotlight on the biggest stage. Manscaped's Beard Hedger Pro Kit is the ultimate franchise player to take your grooming game to the end zone. This package has made it easier than ever to craft your signature look with ease. Featuring the Beard Hedger Cordless Trimmer, it packs one guard with 20 different lengths. That's right, no more messy drawers full of guards. But wait, there's more. The Beard Hedger is water resistant as well. Run it under the sink and shave in the shower for easy cleanups. It's time to move the sticks from your old beard razor. Look and feel ready for the big game every day with Manscaped's beard formulations, including beard balm, beard oil, shampoo, and conditioner. And lastly, as a bonus, Manscaped has thrown in a beard accessory pack, beard brush, beard comb, and beard scissors for the finishing touches every modern bearded gentleman deserves. That playoff beard has never looked better. Trust Manscaped to get the job done. Remember, get 20% off and free shipping with our code 2BundesligaPod at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com with our code 2BundesligaPod. What are you waiting for? Gear up for the real halftime show where your beard takes the center stage. Now, back to the podcast. Crisis in Gelsenkirchen, that was the talk heading into match day 20 for Schalke when they welcomed Eintracht Braunschweig to the Veltins Arena on Saturday afternoon. Braunschweig had won 4 on the bounce and were looking very ominous as to usurping Schalke in the table. A win would have got them ever closer out of the relegation zone. The pressure was all on Schalke, and after a nervy start to the game, Schalke started to hit their strides. They hit the crossbar in the first half through Keenan Karaman, and it certainly looked like, offensively at least, Schalke had something going. Defensively though, Braunschweig had some relative ease of how they were able to transition the ball and just didn't have the final ball. The lack of precision did hurt them, and this became very apparent as the game progressed. Second half came around and Schalke eventually found their way through. It was a ball from Derry John Merkins found Keenan Karaman. He turned Erman Bacacic inside out, and the Turkish striker found the back of the net. And a crucial goal it was, and it would be the only goal of this game as Schalke scored a massive win. And when you talk about results elsewhere in the league, it's an important victory for them, especially in the fight for the relegation zone. But we're not here to just talk about Schalke. We're here to talk about Eintracht Braunschweig, who many, many match days ago, in the middle of 2023, it looked certain that Eintracht were in a bit of bother. But 4 consecutive wins, and unfortunately that streak ends yesterday. They have still very much put themselves in the hunt to avoid the relegation zone. To help me talk about Eintracht Braunschweig as a whole and discuss this game, it is the one and only Kivi, who was at the game itself. Kivi, how are you? I know it's pretty short turnaround. Can imagine that just getting your voice back after a pretty vocal turnout in Gelsenkirchen. How was the game for you? Obviously disappointing with the result, but how did you see it, perspective for Eintracht?
Yeah, a little bit disappointing, but with 4 wins before, it's not the end of the world and not the end of the relegation battle. We are still quite in the mix, and I think we had a good start. We had 2 pretty good chances at the first with Ryan Philippe just missing I think it was Fabio Kaufmann or Johan Gomez. And where Merkin just cleared the ball before him, but we couldn't make something out of those nervous Schalke. They were pretty nervous, and they became stronger and stronger, and they were on the brink of a goal before halftime, I think. And yeah, we couldn't show that we have 4 wins before. I think we were pretty nervous as well. A lot of times, and yeah, I don't think the goal from Karaman, I think it was a little bit surprising at the time it happened, because at that time it did went back and forth, but not really big chances before and before the goal. But after that, we didn't have any big chances as well. We had a lot of ball possession, possession of the ball in the last 20 minutes, but no real chances as well. And I think we never had this many possession in the whole season. It's typically around 35% or so. But I think a draw or even a win would have been possible if we could have shown a little bit more precision or a drive in the attack.
Agreed. And you look at like both starts of each half, you have the chance early on, which I think what Braunschweig did really well, they did two things that really stood out in the opening 15 minutes. The first being that when they saw Matriciani was in the starting 11, we know his defensive inequality, shall we say. Lots of action with Doncor, who was allowed to get up very high when Braunschweig had possession. And the second thing is, the one thing that this Schalke defense can't do is defend balls in behind. And when you've got pacey players like Gomez and Philippe, who have really shown their individual quality under Daniel Schoening, that's your bread and butter. And you can see that Braunschweig optimized that early on. You could sense, and I think in the stadium, it certainly from watching the broadcast, that it was a very nervous energy, and Schalke really understood that they couldn't concede first, because this is exactly how Braunschweig want to play. They are more than happy to, if they can score first and control the game state, sit back. They know they've got the pace. And you look at a lot of the goals Braunschweig have scored under Schoening, lots of counter-attack, quick transitions, really benefiting from teams that aren't particularly strong defensively. And yeah, you just wonder if one of those shots in, you know, Kaufmann had that volley which he whiffed immediately at the start of the second half, and you wonder if one of those goals go in, what does the perspective look like for Schalke? Because for mine, if Braunschweig score early, the game plays into their hand perfectly. They've got an improved solid defensive base with Bacacic and Kurace, who've really sort of gelled together as that defensive two. We know the pace and quality that they've got, and the creativity that they've got with the likes of Kaufmann, Philippe and Gomez, who have thrived under Schoening. Wanted to get your impression on the interesting choice to start Nicholas Toyer, who hasn't played a lot of football this season, only once for Schalke during the Hinrunde. He got the start in this game. What was your impression of his performance? Because he looked like someone who was obviously trying to make a point, but not. Sometimes it came across as perhaps he was trying a little bit too hard to make a significant impression to get more minutes.
I would have started him as well, but instead of Krause and not instead of Helgason, because I think Helgason is more important and more creative in his attacking play, and Krause did lose a lot of balls and does give possession away very easy. He's not the best with the ball, he can defend well, and he's a fighter, but not a really good player attacking wise. I think he also lost the ball before the goal.
Yep.
And Tower is a little bit more offensive playing than Krause, but still can defend. I think we played with him on the both line, and we changed that some minutes in the game that Tower went a little bit more up, but I do think if we would have started with Tower and Helgason, it would have been easier for us to play our normal counter attacking style. As Tower is not the same qualities in one versus one duels, and Helgason did play pretty good in the last games, but he only is able to play 60-70 minutes because his fitness doesn't seem to be that good. But Tower is, for me, is one of the players who will and should start in the next games and potentially replace Krause, as he's playing poorly with the ball since a lot of matches.
It will be interesting, and I tend to agree. It was quite fascinating how Braunschweig approached the game, given that the way they'd played over the past 4 weeks, it was almost built for them to play their game. And we saw early in the first half in particular how Schalke were also quite tentative on the ball and had real trouble breaking down Braunschweig defensively. And it wasn't until about midway through the first half that Schalke really started to get behind the defensive line and start to create some chances. And we saw that Schalke were certainly a lot stronger towards the end of the first half and building that momentum. Yeah, to me, it feels like a missed opportunity as well for Braunschweig, given the vulnerabilities around Schalke. Mm. The pressure's always going to be on Schalke to win such a contest. And yeah, it does feel disappointing. But let's talk about it as a whole, because we were talking about this just before we started, that it looked really grim for Braunschweig. They were very much matching Osnabrück in terms of it's looking pretty early to, but you could book your ticket to the third division. But Daniel Schoening's come in, and admittedly there were some doubts about his managerial quality given what had happened with Bielefeld the season before, but he certainly unlocked the creativity that lacked under Jens Hartel. Tell me about the comparison and in the feeling between having experienced some of Jens Hartel's football in the early parts of the season to sort of the more counter-attacking, more fast transitions with Daniel Schoening.
Yeah, it's the biggest difference is it's a counter-attacking. We didn't do that very often with Jens Hartel. We tend to use long balls to Antonio Uja, who was injured and wasn't even there after his injury, so no one could use the long balls, as Felipe and Gomez or Krüger are not that good in the air, or not that strong as Uja to shield the ball. We did bring in Vitracic. He didn't play. He wasn't there when Hertel was our coach, and Schoening did sub on and use the qualities of Felipe, who didn't really play, didn't get any game time before, and he is really the perfect player for our new game style for counter attacking. He can shoot very well. He's a scorer type of player, I would say. He can shoot from any position in the box. And we did get the luck we lacked before. Maybe not against Osnabrück. There was not was a little bit of but unlucky that it was this close. I think if you play this game 10 times, it wouldn't get that close most of the times with the two penalties. With the two strange penalties as well. Mm. But the games after that, we did get behind three times, I think. Only three teams in this after 2000 did manage to win three times in a row after getting behind in the second Bundesliga. So we weren't so self-conscious or that we had. We knew we could win, and we weren't afraid of losing, as it seemed under Jens Hertel, that we were very afraid of what could happen. And we had nothing to lose. That's an important point as well, because everyone thought we were already relegated. And in the game with Schalke, we could lose something, as we could have made the first really big step and could fall behind if we lose, as we did now. So maybe that was a key factor, as we not playing we did play with a little bit of self-consciousness in the game against Schalke. And of course it's a huge crowd, not the typical crowd to play in the second Bundesliga. But yeah, I think Daniel Schoening didn't make the right easy changes. Nothing huge, but easy changes. And he did play some of the new sidings, as they played they did get few game time under Jens Hertel. Even Helgason or the other players, we played with pretty much the players from the last year who didn't even play then, because we lost key players from the last season. If we would have started them before under Hertel, we probably wouldn't have been this far in the relegation zone, but it is what it is, and it looks a little bit better now, but it's still a long way to go.
That it is, as we know, it is a marathon, not a sprint. Let's have a quick look at the games ahead. Karlsruhe at home next week. They've been proven to be a bit of an up and down kind of side. Then you've got St. Pauli and Hertha as your next coming up, essentially, for the month of February. How optimistic are you that Braunschweig can, in fact, take some points against some pretty decent sides, but each team, maybe with the exception of St. Pauli, have their vulnerabilities that we know that can be exploited with some of the qualities that Braunschweig has.
I think we didn't lose to St. Pauli since a couple of games. We even won two times last season against them and ended their 10-game win streak, which probably resulted to them not going up, as they failed to continue their good games after that. Karlsruhe is difficult to predict, as they play a little bit, yeah, they are up and down, as you said. But I think they didn't lose since the last 6 matches or so. All the 3 teams fit our playstyle pretty well, I think, because they all want to have the ball, as all attacking player have attacking players who want to score, and we have the time. We don't need to score very early. That's not what we need for our game. But what is worrying me is that if we can't play our counter attack, there is no plan B.
Yep.
We don't free kicks, corners are very very bad, horrendous, I would say, and we don't have a creative play, really creative player, a playmaker yet. Hampus Finde came a couple of days ago as a new signing. He can fit that role, but he didn't train with the team until now. And he can take free kicks and corners, apparently. We will see if he continues to do so in Braunschweig. But yeah, Antoine Udra is coming back. Maybe he can improve his form, because in the last 3 games he didn't look that good. He's became a little he became slower. He missed a big chance against Magdeburg, and Florian Krüger didn't play that well either. But he was also before. I think at the moment, if we summon most of the players are remarkably worse than the players on the pitch at the moment. We played with Sebastian Griesbeck in the attack against Schalke, who is a center defensive midfielder or a center back, and is really, really slow and not the agile type of player. We did have a lot of possession in the last minutes against Schalke, and there were no really big chances, or not small chances as well. I think one long shot from Helgason, which was, he had a lot of time and room, and the ball went very far wide.
Yeah.
It was a little bit disappointing, but I think there's a plan B, is something we need to work on.
Absolutely. You talked about set pieces, and heading into this match day, Braunschweig had the fewest goals scored from set pieces with 1 for the campaign, which is 2 fewer.
Ivanov.
Yeah, that's right. 2 fewer than Osnabrück, Hanover, and Magdeburg. Greuther Fürth and Kiel are top in that with 10 each. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how Braunschweig get on. It's a big end of month. I really like them in that game against Hertha. I think after watching them last night, stop Fabian Riese and you can stop Hertha quite easily. But Kivi, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate talking Eintracht Braunschweig with you. Where can our followers find you on socials?
On Twitter or X, Kiwi_97, and on Instagram, Kiwi_Kunert, KUNERT.
There we are. Thank you very much, Kivi. All the best, and we wish Braunschweig a good rest of the Rückrunde.
Thank you for inviting me.
From the glory of DFB Pokal success, Fortuna Düsseldorf made the journey to Paderborn, seeking to reignite their promotion fight. After playing 120 plus minutes, you could be forgiven for thinking that they may be a little bit on the fatigue side, but they started the game probably the more positively, especially in the opening 15 minutes. But unfortunately for them, it came crumbling very quickly. Three goals in the space of 18 minutes from David Kinsombi, Mattias Hansson and Philip Bilbia had Paderborn heading into the dressing room 3-0 up. I can imagine the response Daniel Thune would have had for his troops at the break. Three changes, and the changes all worked perfectly as Dusseldorf got it going. Just 4 minutes into the second half, Yannick Engelhardt got a goal back, and then a first Zweite Bundesliga goal for Marlon Mustafa, who's making a turn of it in the Zweite Bundesliga from Hoffenheim. But as much as they huffed and puffed, they just couldn't find an equalising goal, and Paderborn eventually eclipsed a fourth. Koen Kostens, who signed during the winter period, got his first goal for Paderborn. A consolation goal on the 90 by Dennis Yastrzemski made it 4-3, but they couldn't find an equalising goal, and Paderborn takes a step closer to potentially putting themselves as an outside chance for promotion. These teams are now equal on points with 31, along with Hanover, who we'll talk about in Group 3. Good win for Paderborn. Thought they were in a bit of strife early on. Good positive start by Dusseldorf. But mega efficient. Four goals from all four shots on target. 11 shots for the entire game. Didn't miss any big chances. It's a good result for Paderborn. And we talk about how difficult it is to win in this league. And we sort of look at where Paderborn are as a club. And, you know, it was looking very grim early. And they found a way to get themselves out of the shades. And whilst I still don't believe their credentials are valid for promotion, finishing in the top six seems very reasonable for them. And look, there were some interesting things. We saw some structural changes post the second goal, so mid about 65 minutes. Krasniok moved to a back four after sticking with a back three for the majority of the game. And that seemed to at least solidify them a little bit more structurally after being under a lot of pressure in the early phase of that second half. You know, it's kind of interesting because the game could have gone easily a different way. Even though they did get the 3-2 through Mustafa, that miss from Daferner was unbelievable. Bovink was beaten, as in he was, for some reason, trying to dispute the crosser inside the 18-yard box. He went at him, and Daferner had an open goal. Don't know how he missed it. But, yeah, pretty flat performance in the end for Dusseldorf. 1 point from their three league games this season, and whilst the cup stuff is really cool, and we'll find out at some stage, I think next week or the week after, who their opponent will be in the semi-final, with the other two games to be played. I think it was Saarbrücken and Borussia Mönchengladbach, and I think Leverkusen and Stuttgart, yep, are to play on Tuesday night and Wednesday night, and we'll see who they face off against. But yeah, their next three games they'll feel are winnable. Elversberg at home, they put five past them in the initial fixture. Karlsruhe and Hansa Rostock at home, there should be some points on the table for them. They played a pretty good game. Dusseldorf, they just didn't finish off their hard work. Paderborn. Yep, vital points. Oh my lord, cannot speak. 5 points away from Kiel in that playoff spot. You know, they've taken 4 points from their opening out of a possible nine. But they're playing okay. They're okay. The defense is still iffy. As you know, we've talked about a lot of wholesale changes for them. But yeah, things are going okay for Paderborn, I think. If you were to say that they would be 7th after match day 10 and just 5 points off the playoff, I think you'd take that if you were Paderborn. Kaiserslautern up next at the Fritz-Walter Stadion, then Kiel at home, and then Wiesbaden away on a Friday night ends their February foray. Let's make a move to the Wildpark Stadion. Karlsruhe against Wien Wiesbaden. Really fascinating game. Markus Kaczynski leading Wiesbaden back to his old stomping ground. And look, for Karlsruhe, the modus operandi seems to be that the two-striker combination of Budo Zivševace and Igor Matanovic is working really well. Both scored in this game, both have 7 goals this season, and when you look at that, that's 14 goals out of the 38 that Kartse has managed this season. It's been very good. But the biggest issue still plagues them is defensively, and unfortunately, it was his birthday yesterday on the Sunday, and I don't want to rip into Patrick Dreves too much, but his two spilling of the beans led to goals. The first one, moments into the second half, shot comes in, he fumbles it. Ivan Pretayan scores 7th goal for him, and then similar, just 16 minutes from normal time ending. This time it was Nick Bartzner who got the goal. But I felt Wiesbaden were better set up after that goal, the last 15. It really felt like they were more likely to score. They had a couple of opportunities from set pieces that stung, eventually were claimed by Dreves, but I was impressed. I think Wiesbaden were able to create the better opportunities. We know how lax Karlsruhe are defensively. We also know that throughout the season that they've tried a lot of different variations in terms of the partnership and trying to get consistency. They had Franco and Kobold again, and I don't know, maybe it's a midfield thing that they're not getting enough protection. You look at the four that they've got Gondorff playing in a single pivot, Vanecek and Burnich with Niebel playing it as a 10 with that sort of narrow diamond formation. Yeah, I don't know why they always feel like they just don't have the protection. You know that Heiser and Jung are going to bomb forward, very good for overlapping. They can put a ball into the box. But often it's the transitions they get caught out. I mean, in this case, they were a bit unfortunate that the goalkeeper made a couple of mistakes that led to goals. But with every sort of error, Wiesbaden were ready and ready to pounce, and they did so with quite relative ease. But yeah, it was a good game from Wiesbaden. I felt they should have got more out of it. I think they if they had they won this game, they would have been well worth the 3 points. So for Karlsruhe, they are 28 points, 8 points above the relegation zone, and only 8 points away from the playoff spot held by Kiel in third. So it's a weird season. It's nice and close, which is really great. For Wiesbaden, 26 points gets you 12th, only goal difference behind Hertha, 6 points ahead of Rostock and Eintracht Braunschweig, who are 16th and 17th. Wiesbaden this coming weekend are home against Nuremberg, then they've got Schalke away on a Saturday afternoon, then Paderborn at home. Karlsruhe got Braunschweig on a Saturday afternoon, as we mentioned just before. Fortuna Düsseldorf, and then Kaiserslautern away in a nice little regional derby, which will be fun. Let's take a final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the final three games starting at the Max Morlock Stadion when Nuremberg hosts Osnabrück. With the hopes of safety slipping away for Osnabrück, they knew that they needed to get some results and fast. They were hopeful that their trip to Nuremberg would bear fruit. The only thing it bared, though, was that Can Özcan is one special player and will eventually make Nuremberg quite a bit of money should they sell in the summer. The first goal of the game was just a classic case of just the ball is lava for Osnabrück. There's a great picture behind the goal of the four defenders in a square, zonal marking. But when you enter sort of the final third towards the edge of the box, someone lay a tackle. Anyone. Diakite, Jamfi, Kunsa, whoever. Just lay a tackle. And I don't think it was almost like a game of chicken. No one wanted to lay the tackle, and as a result, Özcan scored. But in spite of this, Osnabrück would get a goal just before the break. Christian Conte with a beautiful ball into the box. And Erik Engelhardt, who's waited a while. He's been their best goal scoring threat all season. He puts into the back of the net 1-1 at the break. Unfortunately, that equaliser lasted all but 6 minutes into the second half because Can Özcan once again. Great pass from Nathaniel Brown. The touch from Özcan is just high quality, and the finish equally as good. 2-1, you're thinking, okay, this is Nürnberg's. They look very comfortable. Hard to see them losing from here. Hard to see them not winning, getting a result here. But credit to Osnabrück. They really fought for this game. And I thought in the second half, after the 2-1, they really controlled the game. They really put Nürnberg on the back foot. And they peppered the goal mouth. And Karl Klaus had to make some really good saves. Thought he was quite solid between the pipes for Nürnberg. But they just couldn't hold on, Nürnberg. And into the depths of stoppage time, Kwasi Riet, who hasn't scored all season for Osnabrück in the league, taps in from close range. He managed to stay onside. And 2-2 is your final score. With Braunschweig, and we're going to talk about Hansa Rostock in a second, Kaiserslautern as well, all dropping points. Unfortunately, it's a missed opportunity for them because they actually played quite well. I think it was one of their better performances we've seen from Nürnberg this season, because they could have easily lost, from Osnabrück, because they could have easily lost this game, because right at the death, 97th minute, Lucas Schleimer had an effort on goal which beat Philipp Kühn. And Christian Conte, who's just tracked back, has made an unbelievable stop. There's a great camera on the goal line that shows what he's done. I implore you to go see it because it's just unbelievable. Because behind the goal, all the Nürnberg fans are all like, you hear that loud roar of like the thought of a goal, and it's an unbelievable stop. I mean, you know, for your attacking winger to get deep and make a play like that. Crucial, because what it could have done had the results been different is, well, Nürnberg would have jumped up to eighth with 30 points and Osnabrück would remain 10 points adrift of Braunschweig and Hansa Rostock. At least it gives them a bit of hope. Defensively, though, you know, they're still obviously a way away. They're now back to being the worst defence in the league. Schalke and Kaiserslautern just a goal behind. But it's going to be difficult. Look, it is going to be really difficult for them to... And we'll probably harp on it for quite a bit. For Nürnberg, nothing... Yeah, I don't know. It's to me, it's very similar to the Riese stuff. Like, I don't know where this team is. If you take away the 10 goals that Özen has scored this season... They've scored 19 goals. They are relegation numbers. Like, genuinely relegation numbers. And that's... You can't dispute that. 10 goals and an assist. Okay, so you can take 11 goals off the board. 18 goals. That's equal worst with Osnabrück. And I know these are hypotheticals, but if we do the math, he's been so important for them this season. And that's a lot of responsibility on an 18-year-old. Yeah, he's just a kid. But the kid can play, and he's a baller, and he's shown he's the real deal at this level. And I would suspect that there are going to be Bundesliga clubs, potentially clubs in England and elsewhere in Europe, that will be eager to sign him because he's unbelievable. But it also shows you the issues that Nürnberg will have got when he doesn't play, but also... there's gotta be more options. Like, I liked Anderson's game. I thought he played quite well, just didn't have the touch for a goal. But he gave them an option up top. So that's something they've been looking for as a striker who can, you know, hold up the ball, is very good aerially, which he was. He had a few efforts on goal from header. But yeah, their next three games are pretty important. In the context of trying to not get dragged into that scrap, because, you know, think about it, that there's only 6 points separating 11th from 17th, and results can quickly change the perspective. That Wiesbaden game on Friday becomes really important. Kaiserslautern at home, and then obviously the Frankenland derby against Fürth, and you don't want to lose that game. That could really put some pressure on for Osnabrück. Massive six-pointer against Hansa Rostock. They know a win could at least give them a little bit of hope. Elversberg away, and then Hanover at home to end their Feb. So there's some big games for both sides. Neither can be particularly happy with a point in this game. Let's make a move to the Heinz von Heiden Arena. Hanover against Hansa Rostock. Big game for both clubs, especially Hansa. But they were given an opportunity to get out of the bottom three should they beat Hanover on Sunday. They did not. 2-1 defeat for them. Both goals they conceded came from set pieces. Derek Kuhn whipping a ball into the box, an in-swinger. The first one came off Kevin Schumacher. The second one was such great set-piece design and a lot, just brilliant play. They sort of had everyone crowding the edge of the six, and they had Halstenberg at the back post in a one-on-one matchup, which he wins this matchup, heads across the goal of Marcus Kolker. Brilliant play. The game was 1-1 at halftime. A terrible mistake from Ron Robertzila, who really should have just cleared the ball, but he tries to play the pass. Purga intercepts and just pops it in for a goal. His pressing was good in this game. I actually like it when he is allowed to be aggressive. I think they were better in the second half, Rostock. I thought they didn't start the game particularly well, and Hanover sort of held the game state. But they had their chances late. Zila made some pretty important saves. But yeah, it's tough. You know, we spoke about it with Kivi. The challenge between those two teams is going to be really important. And obviously that game against Osnabrück on the weekend at the Bremer Brücke is massive, because Rostock can really kill off any chance that Osnabrück has, but also keep themselves from, at arm's length, whether it's with Braunschweig, whether it's Kaiserslautern, whether it's Schalke. Then Hamburg at home, which is a World Feed game, and then Dusseldorf. Hanover, look, their only blemish really was that the red card to Marcel Halstenberg, which was silly. It was clumsy. Just don't know why you're doing that in the first place. So, the games they've got coming up, Hamburg away, Fürth at home, both World Feed games, both Friday night. If Hanover are able to pull themselves into the mix, they've got Arian Bay who can fill alongside Neumann, since they've switched this back for this season, this calendar year. But he's really been the general of that defensive unit. It's a big loss. And, Hamburg are vulnerable. They are beatable. They've shown they've been beatable this season. I'd much rather have him in the mix than not against Hamburg and Fürth. But they're going to have to do without. And then they've got Osnabrück at the end of the month. There was a bit of a scuffle at the end of the game at full time between Oliver Husing and Fabian Kunze, which, that was interesting. Very, very interesting. There was some hubris there. Let's go to our final game. Elversberg, Kaiserslautern. 2-1 for Elversberg. First win of the calendar year. Kaiserslautern just couldn't find a way to win this game after beating Hertha in the Pokal, making the semi-finals. Big result for them. Furthest they've gone since 2014. And the goal they scored through Ake, brilliant, brilliant goal. We know how... It's only their second loss when he scored this season. So, yeah, it wasn't without chances. It's an unfortunate penalty they gave up, the handball from Toure. Kind of just rode up on him. But a good decision by Atkin. I think it was a penalty. Tor Jakobsen scored that pen. The opening goal came from Paul Varner. Third goal of the season. He's really good. He's pretty good quality and fits their system quite well. I think as the season progressed, you'd like to see him continue to find the back of the net if you're Elversberg. But there's some real quality about the way he plays. And I think Bayern did a good job in actually getting him there. I also think after the penalty, Elversberg really just got on top. And it sort of deflated Kaiserslautern. It became very difficult for Kaiserslautern to find a way through. And they had that sort of half chance. Had had that ball to Stojukovic made it, they might have got the 2-2. But yeah, it's really good for Elversberg. They needed the win. Had they not won, they would have been very much in that mix with Kaiserslautern. But they've got that buffer now. They're 8 points clear, and they're sitting into the top half of the table. Also breaks their winless run as well. So big win for them. Still got a lot of work to do. Good result for Elversberg. They've got Fortuna Dusseldorf on Saturday, then Osnabrück, and then Hamburg. That's a world feed game. So if anyone is listening, that will be the first time that Elversberg will be on the world feed. As I know, Jake, who does 50 plus Duna, does a great job covering it for an American audience. Would have been very happy to see Kern win, so good on that one. But he's been keeping track of like all the world feed games and who's been getting what. And February, Hamburg have every world feed game. They're on every week. But it'll be the first time we see Elversberg on the world feed, so hopefully Horst Steffen can cook something up quite good. For Kaiserslautern, they've got Paderborn at home in the top game, which should be a really interesting one. Hopefully we get plenty of goals, because both teams have shown they've got a knack for the goal, but they've also got a knack for conceding, so that'll be fun. Watch. Then they've got Nürnberg and Karlsruhe, and that'll end their Feb. Thank you for listening to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. A little bit longer this week, but it was great to have Kivi on to talk about Eintracht Braunschweig and how he's seen their season so far. We hope you have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next time for our Matchday 21 review when the Zweite Bundesliga continues.